Justin, we have an incredible announcement for the people. Tell them.
Big announcement coming. Austin, Texas, this November, the second Intentional Fatherhood Retreat. We are pumped. What dates, Brooke?
November 12th through the 14th, you can join us in Austin, Texas for a weekend to get away and to be refreshed and transformed as a father. Tell the people what they can expect, Justin.
We're going to have incredible worship. We're going to have great teaching. We're going to have a community of dads all coming together, not just to hear a biblical framework on how to live intentionally as a father, but also to be equipped with tons of practical habits and help on how to do that. Most of all, though, this is the kind of thing where you come into a community of dads who are all trying to follow Jesus into fatherhood together. And let me tell you guys, this will change your life. So we want you there.
Come out, go get your tickets at intentionalfatherhood.org. You can get all of your tickets there. And please, again, join us. Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we explore what it means to live on purpose as a father and how legacy starts at home. I'm Justin Whitmore Early.
And I'm Brooke Moser. We'll be your hosts, and we desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to season three of the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. We are pumped because we are rolling here. We are diving deep into the topic of work, vocation, calling, purpose, meaning in your work, balancing your life of family and work. We're going all in on this one. If you tuned in last time, you're going to have the recap in your mind. We did a whole season one on the map of tensions in fatherhood. Then we did a whole season two on the sort of story, time look at fatherhood of giving your life away. Now we are taking all the places on the map and we're diving deep. This season is on work. So you're going to want to keep updated. How do people keep updated?
Well, there's a couple ways. Well, first of all, we have to note you're getting stronger at this, no doubt.
Like, is that better than my last introduction?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, the first one wasn't bad. I'm just saying, like, noting
the fact there's that been growth. You're noting it says I'm not up to par yet.
No, I'm noting that.
I feel like I have
this wasn't a backhanded compliment. You did a great job. Let me say that.
I feel like I have my learner's permit right now. Like,
can I introduce a podcast?
I'm like being tested. I'm not free to do it
yet. Not even at all. I'm not the boss, dude. I think I've had to do it so many billions of times on other podcasts that it's like it just comes natural. But it's natural. You're getting there.
All right. Good.
Hey, listen. I would give you at least a 93%.
Could people maybe, if they approve of how I'm doing, like and subscribe this podcast? Because that would help me to know if my introductions are good.
So yes, how you get the word out and let people know about it is by liking, subscribing, and leaving a comment. That detail is actually very important because there's few ways that we can interact with you outside of email, which please email hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. Give us feedback that way. That's super helpful. But it's one of the ways that we know how this is helping you and even directionally. Social media is one way, leaving comments on different podcast platforms that you listen to, but also emails. That whole like trinity of information in a digital space when we are trying to pour into people digitally. It's just the one way to get some feedback. So very helpful ways to do that. And if you like this, share it. I cannot tell you how helpful that is. Word of mouth.
So helpful.
Just sharing it with your friends. You're like, this has been helpful. And we said this, maybe we meant to say this last time, Justin, tell me if we did or didn't. I can't remember. Listen to this as much as you can with your friend group.
We said it last time. We're going to start saying it like a broken record.
It's so important.
You know, if you listen to this, then you hear us say all the time, community changes everything. Your fatherhood needs community. Your fatherhood needs friendship.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to do that is to listen to the same things, read the same things, be engaged in the same deep conversations. There's conversations we're going to have in this season and every season that you just can't do alone.
You cannot.
You can't figure out your calling alone, for example. And we'll dive deep into that today.
And last detail before we jump into today is you can also watch all this on YouTube. And so check it out. Go over to YouTube. You can watch all this.
You want to see the sweet gold chain that Brooke is wearing right now?
Well, I want to just say, man, you know how what is John Wesley? Someone said, not John Wesley. It's a quote about basically like, I could live off of a good compliment for 6 months or something like that. And I was just like, dude, wearing this shirt, I was like, I'm feeling pretty tight. And you're like, you are looking pretty tight.
You turned
out,
dude. I was like, dude, in the gym.
I was like, I've been trying, dude. I lost some LPs. I'm trying, dude. I can't, my body's trying to teach my soul. But my mouth is trying to teach my body that food is good. You know what I'm saying? And amen.
I have no comment.
I wish there was a book for this. Anyway, That's called a shout out, an unintentional shout out for the book, The Body Teaches the Soul. Actually, a very good book.
Let's
all
go.
Jokes aside,
like
very
and subscribe
good.
That one too.
Yes, very good. Very grateful. I got to endorse it, although it didn't need. No one bought the book because I endorsed it, ironically.
We don't know that. I'm someone is going to sure. comment. Someone, I'm gonna
I bought it because Brooke said this. Something.
Someone is going to comment. Actually, I bought The Body Teaches the Soul.
Only because
I saw Brooke
endorsed it. Anyway, let's talk about, we had the whole foundation. We want to talk about calling. You don't find your calling, you form it.
Ooh, there's our thesis. Say it again.
You do not find your calling, you form it. And I hope that is enough to pull you in, because that is a truth that has been so helpful for me. And I think for many, hopefully.
Mm.
But we want to talk about this, because this idea of calling, what it is, how to find it. Do you find it? Is it for, like, we want to kind of unpack, and we also want to help you truly be able to see what calling is, what it isn't, and then therefore, where are you at in your journey?
I'm not sure this is going to be a thing, okay. But I'm just asking, do you want to hear my word map on this one?
Oh, actually, I do. Your word map is fascinating.
I liked it a lot. I'm having a fun time word mapping episodes, because I'm like, okay, here's the constellation of ideas.
It's very helpful.
We're talking about calling.
Well, and we go back and forth with all of our ideas, which I love. Like, it's like we just put them through the, it keeps getting different and different. But when you do these word maps, it's so helpful to just the broad. And so, hit them with it.
You think they're helpful?
I really do.
Dude, thank you so much.
I'm not
A good compliment you can run for months. All right, here's the word
about. I'm sitting over here flexing.
Calling.
Do I look stronger?
Calling.
Yeah.
Your gifting, world needs, grind, iterate, talent, your story, do something, free will and providence.
Ooh.
Free will and providence. I started to get out there on this one. And I'm going to bring it to that.
We're going to need to.
But that's my short mind map.
Okay. Also, we're going to do this episode while drinking a very tailor-made cup of coffee by Justin Whitmell Early. When are you going to start your own coffee shop? You have too much to do.
I want to note, you're drinking my pour over. I'm drinking my AeroPress.
That was right. Okay.
And some people are tuned in to hear how each was made. I'll give you the specs later.
We should talk about it. Yeah. We'll start a separate Instagram account of what OCD looks like through coffee.
Good.
Just kidding.
I'll tell you what, I'm not called to coffee, but how would I know, Brooke? Did I form it? Did I find it?
Well, let me tell you, first you have to kill, and this is serious. We need to kill the lightning bolt myth. I think there's this myth. Well, I don't think, I know. There's this myth that, like, you are going to get zapped with a calling, and here you go, zing, and now you're calling, and now you're ready to go. And this can be formed in so many different ways. Misunderstanding of how people's stories work, what it looks like. Most of the time, if you are a person and you come across someone's story that's impacting you, most likely social media has changed the game a bit. But even before social media, it was because that person's calling or their life or situation had some sort of focus on it, attention on it, that was maybe bigger than what the 9-to-5 job was. Now, you get to see that part of their story, but you don't. It wasn't a lightning bolt. When you saw it was when you saw it, but there was years and decades usually of story that was being formed before that. And it's the same with all of us. Like, you're not going to get zapped with a calling as much as you are through your story, which we're going to talk about, your life, through decisions that you make, are becoming the type of person. Willard, or if we're talking about Buchner versus Beekner.
Yeah, I think it's correctly Dallas Willard.
That's a great callback. I'm all about that callback, dude. I think it's Dallas Willard. It's Dallas Willard.
Jean-Marc Comer.
So Comer, yeah. It's to eat. He loves to eat. Dallas Willard says, your job is not your calling. Your calling is to become a certain kind of person.
Oh, so good.
And I think that helps frame, like, you don't just find your calling, you form it. And that idea is that a lot of men, unless we slow down to think through, pray through, what do I want to do? What I feel made to do? What do I enjoy? What am I good at? All that stuff, we can live someone else's lives. I talk to a lot of men, I think most men in many ways, are living someone else's life. And what I mean by that
is— You said this in our planning, and I'm like, this is a very intriguing statement.
Because
I didn't ask you to unpack it. I was like, oh, I want to hear you unpack that in real time.
Okay.
Correct use of the word in real time, by the way. In real time, what do you actually mean? most men are, that's a bold claim. Most men are living someone else's life.
Unless you slow down enough to think through your story, what you were made to do, what you're good at, what you're naturally doing, what is already in your hand to do. Many of us will often just take on things without fully asking a handful of questions. You'll get to college and go, well, what am I supposed to? I'm supposed to make money. Well, how do you make money? Well, business major might be a good idea because, I mean, business is everywhere. So, like, why don't we just do business? You commit 4 years and a lot of money to business. And then you get out of business school and you're like, I don't really like business. And then the countless people that I talk to that are like, I have an education, but I didn't do it.
I know a lot of people in law that have done this.
Yeah. And again, it's a very common thing. And there's no shade. If that's your story, it's like, let me just give you the end of the story. It's redeemable. There's redemption here, but it's not slowing down enough to ask a certain level of questions. And what happens is you're living, when I say you're living someone else's life, what I simply mean is that you are taking on a set of responsibilities, ideals, and different people's values. And you're saying, well, this is what I guess I'm supposed to do, rather than asking the deeper question, what am I made to do? What do I want to do? What could I do in the world? And I think there are a whole group of people that they have mentors and models and people, family, especially parents that help them do that. There's a majority of people that never even get into life or adulthood and have asked those questions. Many are listening in a career that you're doing because you feel like it's the right responsible thing to do, but you do not feel called to it. You don't love it. It's hard. And this is a little bit counter, not pushing against our last episode, but it's to say that this is also very important to understand that all work is beautiful, but you're also made for something.
Yeah. I actually hear some tensions here I'm interested in exploring.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the things we're going to try to convince our listeners of is that there's not this magical moment where you, aha, I found out my calling.
Yes.
But rather your calling is formed. It's more process, more choice than you think. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe more you led in some ways rather than like fate led.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you're also, I'm noting another tension. You're noting a lot of ideas about whether what you're doing is really an imitation of someone else's life. And maybe that's why you feel so unsatisfied or trapped or frustrated. Now, both of these are a little bit in tension with two ideas.
Mm-hmm.
One, what we drew out last time, and that is that your work is fundamentally outward.
Yes.
We're going to do, I hope not a contradiction, but a nice compliment. And that is that the right kind of work in many ways should light you up.
Mm-hmm.
Like you shouldn't always feel like, oh, like I don't want to do this. Why am I doing this? It's outward service, but it is also God. I think God made me to be a lawyer and a writer.
Totally.
Like, and I think.
I wish you were a better writer, but that's just my personal feedback.
That's right? Completely inappropriate. I don't even have time to defend myself here.
You don't, because I'm completely joking. You're an incredible writer. Right, I love your writing.
You're going to move right on.
Hey, we just got to poke a little bit. You know?
I do love doing it. I love.
You're
so
good at it. You really
I feel
are.
Made to do it.
Yes.
And that is inward. It's inward satisfaction in my outward call. And then, but here's the tough thing.
Okay.
There's also a lot of other things I could have done.
Okay.
There are real alternate worlds where I'm an architect.
Mm-hmm.
There's real alternate worlds where I could make up some occupations where I'm still a missionary.
Totally.
Where I still play the drums a lot. Maybe I'm more musician than writer. And I can imagine myself in those worlds being like, I'm made to do this.
Mm.
So there's this tension of being like, there is a way that God made you.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of formation here on like, what is your story? How's God working your story? And what are you doing to tailor yourself to the call?
Well, maybe, and we're talking
are we
about,
forming it or are we finding it? Is it for us or is it for the world? Which is it, Brooke?
Yes. The answer is yes. But I actually think when we talk about inward, which I absolutely agree, we're talking about one element the last episode. We're talking about one element of that. If you haven't had a chance, if you're jumping in here, first episode will make a lot more, will help give you a lot of context to this. But just to simply say that there is also an inward story that you're stewarding.
Mm-hmm.
You were born into a family in Richmond, Virginia. That's a that's a particular place in the world. That's a culture. There's all of that that plays into the parts of the things that you could do and are made to do. Now, we're not God, and we're like, the answer is there's so many things this side of heaven that are like yes and, or yes and amen, or just yes when it's like multiple questions. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about is tension. And the thing that Jesus did better than anybody, and with all, he lived in tension. That's the most consistent thing he did. It was beautiful. So we're just going to name the tension. Like, you were made to do stuff. I think God put that in you, and you're also supposed to find it and figure it out, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to succeed at the wrong life. What I mean is, like, you could have success but hate every part of what you do and be so dissatisfied at your core because you're chasing the wrong thing. This is where you see a lot of people make a lot of money but be miserable. Mm-hmm. Like, they made money, they did their thing, but there's no like satisfaction in their life. And when you start doing what you're made to do, money becomes less important.
Yeah.
I'll just say, for me, like, getting to do the work I get to do, I'm grateful that I don't have to think about doing another job, but I don't actually think about, like, how much money could I make to do this? Now, I'm not over revealing. I am not a money motivated person. Now, it's not a badge of honor. It's literally just like, that's not what motivates me the most, because I've been in situations where I've been in work where I just needed money, but I hated my life. Mm-hmm. And that is so miserable. And so to do work that at the end of the day is helping other people is super life-giving to me. I've learned that of all the things I could do, I want to be in some sort of work that helps others, or that I can use what I've learned to help other people. That's really satisfying to who I am and my makeup. Some people are like, I love making money. I'm great at it. I think about money all the time. There's nothing wrong with that, as much as I would say, like, you need to figure out if that's your story. So to succeed at the wrong life simply just could mean that you are doing all the right things for the wrong reasons. You're like, I did all the things to be a family man. And then you wake up one day, you're like, I hated the last 30 years of my life, or the 20 years of my life, because I was responsible, but I never actually took time and space to think about, well, God, what are you making me to do? What have you asked me to do? And then taking the steps to form it.
Yeah.
So maybe let's talk about what that looks like. How is this sparking for you? Where do you want to go? But I have a couple things.
Well, two things. One, this is in part my story. I often say that I felt called to be a father, felt called to be a writer, felt called to be a lawyer.
Yep.
Two, there's been some resources that have really helped me with these questions. So I'll share briefly.
Yeah, please do.
Both of those. When I told this story in brief in season two, in the getting our, in season two, we fleshed out getting your life together, giving your life away, giving your death away, mm-hmm. as sort of a path of manhood, mm-hmm. path of fatherhood.
Yes.
And in the stage of getting my life together, I had a really important moment. It was a summer, I think after my sophomore year of college, or as we say at UVA, my second year of college, where I asked the Lord to call me to be a father, a writer, and to go to China. So there were three things on my mind. And this was a really interesting tension point for me of calling, because two things were happening. One, I was starting to realize the truth of the quote I had never heard by Dallas Willard, that your calling is not a profession, but it's to be a certain type of person, right? I had read the story about Jesus walking on the water and just been utterly struck. I think it was the day before, maybe the morning before this moment, about how Peter, through his seasons with Jesus, had become the kind of person that when he saw someone out in the stormy waves that might be Jesus, he was like, if that's you, call me to yourself. I just want listeners to listen. Yes. Think about this for a second. You see something God is doing or someplace Jesus might be, and you say, if God is there, I want to be there.
Yes.
That's a kind of person. That's not a lightning bolt moment of like, you're made to be a carpenter.
Yeah.
It's the idea of God is forming you into the kind of person that recognizes that your fundamental call is to be like him, be where he is, do what he does.
Yes.
And as I think about my calling moment, the fundamental thing that had changed in me is that I had stopped being that sort of like punk kid version of myself that was, I want to do whatever I want to do. Yeah. Like, I don't know that I want to do what God calls me to do.
Yeah.
To knee-jerk reaction, say, God, wherever you are, I want to be there. And I remember what I prayed that day was, Lord, if you're in these things, I would like to write. Mm. I would like to become a father. I would like to go to China. Mm. Like, would you call me there?
Yes.
And yes. The days and months after that, really it was days and weeks, were a series of affirmations through conversations with friends.
Okay.
That yes, these were things that one could healthily pursue. Mm. Like nobody was saying like, look, don't go to China. That's a horrible decision for you right now because you know, something just happened to your family or this is irresponsible. Mm. People were like, yeah, it sounds like a good decision for you.
Yes.
And it was both this idea of like, I'm becoming the kind of person who wants to be like Jesus. These are the opportunities before me. Mm. I sense a desire in myself to do such things. And my friends confirmed this desire.
Yes.
Yes. It could have been totally different things. The most fundamental part was being where Jesus is. Mm. But then there was just an important process of saying, do you pray about what you want to do?
Yes.
Like you ought to.
Yes,
you want to change vocations? Pray about it.
Yep.
You want to do this or that? Pray about it. Do you talk to friends about what you want to do? You ought to. And by the way, do you have multiple ideas and iterations of what you might do? Because you better have more than one because there's a lot more. That, like I didn't become the writer until a decade later, actually. Mm. I didn't become a father until 7 years later. I became a missionary in China 1 year later.
It takes a long time.
Yeah. And so there's a lot more process. There's a lot more formation. There's a lot more community there. Mm. But nonetheless, I still look at that moment. And I do feel like it was one of those moments where Jesus looked at me and said, follow me here.
Yes.
And I hope that's helpful to people because there's a lot going on. When we say I'm called to this, there's a lot going on underneath that word. And what you don't want to do is interpret it in a pagan lens of like, fate has this for you.
Ooh.
You might miss it or you might find it. You're on your own.
We have a quote.
Fate has this for you.
We have a quote, Carl Jung, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate.
Oh, say that again.
I was gatekeeping this one from you.
Blocked me from
that. This is mine. I'm taking it.
Until you
make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode.
Wow.
Carl Jung for the win, dude.
But and that's kind of what you're talking about, of not understanding your story, not understanding who you are.
So we've been talking about some comments, so let me just make it all pretty succinct right here. What does all this mean? If Willard's saying it's not about your job, it's about becoming this kind of person, making the unconscious conscious, or you'll call it fate, living someone else's life. What we're saying is everyone's called to something very specific. That's to become more like Jesus.
Yeah.
That's to give your
calling
life
number one.
To become more like him, to learn, to implement those things. Your calling is formed from this place of intimacy and knowing who God is. And becoming the type of person that does good and listens and obeys and serves because you love God, not because you have to. There's a myriad of things that you had already mentioned that you could do that would be really fruitful if that first part, your real calling of being a true disciple of Jesus, is in place.
Yeah.
So could you have done all that other stuff? And would it feel like the same? Maybe. Maybe the answer is yes. But this is what made sense to you. Could that be the case for me too? Absolutely. I think I could be doing lots of other things. I have skills that could be very much overlapping with different things. But this is where opportunity, life, story, all of it has overlapped to this point, to that this is where I am. And I think it's if I trace back my story and how it intersects with this idea of like, our first calling is knowing Jesus. let me just maybe give a little tiny story that can just put a for instance on it. So if my calling right now, if you were to look at my life, your calling is to lead intentional, to lead this ministry that's all about spiritual formation in the family, that you focus on marriage, you focus on fatherhood, motherhood, and parenting. If that's my calling, it's my work too. How did all of that come about? Well, first, I was wanting to be formed in the way of Jesus. So I wanted to do something that would further his kingdom. Mm-hmm. So I had a passion to start, like God truly made his heart's desires my heart's desires.
Yeah.
And if you want to pray a prayer, start saying, God, would you change my heart's desires from being self-focused in what I want in my deal? And would you help break my heart for what breaks your heart? Would you give me a passion to mm-hmm. see the world mm-hmm. the way you do? Those kinds of prayers begin to give you a heart that's soft and open to say, okay, here's what God might want that might be different than you. And then secondly, it's my story. My story is I grew up primarily in Portland. I had a really, you know, interesting family situation. Interestingly enough, I shared a lot of my story on the Open Spaces podcast with Jeff and Jordan Johnson. Check that out. And shared a ton of stuff there that I haven't shared in any of our other podcasts, which I might share here soon. But just tons of stuff about what my family was actually like and the different nuances and things I was growing up and struggling with. Mm. And getting to be 17 years old, I work a shift at Starbucks. I meet my now wife, but I met her dad. He was in ministry. I kind of wanted to be in ministry, but I was playing music professionally. At the time, I was just working shifts at Starbucks. And I meet this girl, and then I meet her dad. And then along the way, when I'm out of music and done with music, because I'm like, I don't want to do this for my whole life. They were starting a church, and like, maybe you should be the junior high like youth pastor. I'm like, that sounds terrible. Like, I was signing autographs last week, and now I'm like in a room with 30 sweaty kids. And you trust me with this? Like, it's so weird. And it was the best thing for my ego. I'm just giving like a for instance to say, I started to really want to walk with Jesus in my first calling to become the kind of person that loves Jesus. But then part of it was my story. It was my, yeah. It was my family. It was like, all of a sudden I'm in ministry. And then interestingly enough, why am I doing intentional? Well, my in-laws actually started intentional as a kind of like their retirement plan to say like, we're going to do this. We're going to travel. We're going to do a couple things. And they didn't want it to become anything, but you know, basically this thing where they went and spoke and they wrote, and it wasn't like a, what it is right now.
Yeah.
I'm putting all that together to just simply say, could I have done other stuff? Yes. But this is mm-hmm. also a part of my story, the family I married into, the skills I have. And that's just to hopefully help you see the linear, like you start following Jesus. He gives you direction. You can do different stuff. But my story and understanding it helps me understand and know like where, not only where I've been, but where I am going and what I might want to do with my life. Make sense?
Absolutely. And one of the books that has really, really helped me in this is actually written from a design perspective, not a Christian worldview.
I love it.
It's called, I have it on my lap here.
Oh,
it's,
yes, yes.
It's I've called Designing Your Life.
Yes.
Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. They run, I think still, at least 10 years ago, they did a program at Stanford to yes. help people
design their life. Yes.
Figure out what to do with their life. It's kind of basically figuring out a vocation, but there's a lot more to it. Mm-hmm. And when I read it, I just remember thinking, oh, this is so helpful because it's from a design perspective. But if I were to express what I think is the Christian perspective of finding your calling, mm-hmm. We would come to all the same principles. They get to it from a different place, but mm-hmm. I think it's catchy. So here's some of the things they say. They say you should be like a designer in thinking about your life, and that designers have curiosity. They see problems that other people don't see, and they innovate and iterate to find a ton of different possible solutions.
That's right.
Before yes. one of them catches. And so like, I think if I'm not mistaken, I think one of them helped design the mouse for Macintosh.
So I've like, heard, I've not read this book. I've heard.
Yeah. So
this.
Like figure yes. out where to put it or how it works. Or maybe that's just a story they tell in the book. I can't remember, but it's this idea of like, first you have to notice a problem. Which is like, oh, we got to figure out how to get the cursor to move on the screen. Or hold on, we're trying to sell a laptop and we don't want to plug in a corded mouse. Some people will live their whole life with a corded mouse and never think it's a problem.
Yeah.
But other people are like, the world could be better than this, yeah. you know? And I just stopped there. Pause number yes. one. This is what Buechner was talking about in the quote yeah. we shared last week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where your passion meets the world's need.
Yes.
you're not going to be able to find, quote unquote, your calling. Let's call it what it should be. You're not going to be able to form your calling.
Yes, yes.
Unless you have a curiosity that is aligned with God's view of the world.
Yes.
So that you start seeing the problems that he sees.
Yes.
Like the poor shouldn't be poor.
Yes.
Or like, why are the hungry hungry here? Or why is injustice being done here? Or why is this industry so broken? For me, one of the first things I noticed about lawyering was, why are we also mentally unhealthy? And you know, a lot of people still now accept this is how lawyering is, you know? Yeah. And one of the things that became true of me in my first or second year is I said, I don't think we have to do it this way.
Wow.
Like, I don't think we need to live with the corded mouse of depression in every lawyer's life, or the corded mouse of anxiety in every lawyer's work. And one of the things that my partners and I have tried to talk a lot about at Avoda Legal is, are we mentally healthy? Are our associates mentally healthy?
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of ways would we do work differently in order to be a place of mental health? That's just one example.
Dude, so good.
But that's the idea that you Christians should see problems in the world. It's like what we were talking about on the last episode.
Yep.
Run your vocation through the framework. Here you're asking, what is fallen about the world?
Mm-hmm.
What do I see that's broken that shouldn't be the way it is? Mm-hmm. What do I see that's inefficient? What do I see that's dumb, stupid, unjust? And then you have to do the hard work of asking, am I possibly of help here?
Mm.
You know, I think global poverty is an enormous problem.
Mm.
I have not yet seen in my story the kind of skill set to be able to meaningfully impact that.
Mm.
So Lauren and I have like recently started partnering a lot with Hope International, like a ministry that's in microfinance and money and how to use it, education. Yeah. They help third world countries build gospel-centered cultures of like growing.
Also, we're not sponsored by them.
I've just started to give to you. I would love for you to give to them. I'm just saying that. So I'm like, probably not my calling to fix it, but it is going to be my calling to give towards it.
To help, yes.
And a lot of people think their main, if they're in business again in the for-profit world, they're like, well, my call is to make money to send others to go. I'm like, well, part of it, but that's not your main calling. Like your main calling is to be whatever businessman you are. Also, you should do other things. And this is how we address, like, we're meant to do more than the one thing that we do.
Yes.
But I think that's part of that curiosity, that design perspective of finding solutions. And then I just say one more thing from this book that is, I think, so helpful is they talk about an iterative approach, which is true for any business problem. And also really true for finding/forming your calling, which is you try a lot of stuff before you're like, oh,
yes,
I'm not cut out to be a missionary in China. I'm cut out to be a lawyer. Oh, wait, I'm not cut out to be a lawyer alone. I'm cut out to be a lawyer and a writer. And then it keeps refining. Oh, I'm cut out to be a lawyer and a writer with a huge focus on fatherhood and friendship. Like, you know, you iterate and find. And now I feel like at the age of 40, I'm like, oh, I'm in my calling, dude.
I thought you were a lot older. You look great.
Gray in the beard, dude.
We're both the same age, dude. What you just said about, I just want to say the refining. Oh.
Yeah.
And you got to start somewhere. You know, you have to start designing, and that's one stage. Some of you are, we talked about this. You can't heal everything, but you can name anything. And when you name stuff, a lot of the psychological pressure, stress, anxiety can begin to dissipate. It doesn't go away fully, maybe. Maybe for some it does, but it dissipates. When you name, like, I'm in the designing phase, therefore you're not thinking I'm in the refining stage, which is me getting better at this thing. You're learning what is the thing you're actually good at. And you had to take that first step to be like, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to try to write a book called The Common Rule. Let's just see what happens.
Right.
That was stage one. That was first step. And then you're like, oh, well, I liked doing that. Other people received from that. Other people are interested in letting me do that again. Why don't I do that again?
Yeah.
And then you did it. And then you became a lawyer. But then you realized, I want to change some of this. And the process of then saying, okay, well, actually, I wonder if it'd be better to have my own firm versus, you know, just being a part of one.
Yep.
Just to say that people can easily look at where Justin Whitmell Earlyth, all three at JWE, where he's at now and go, whoa, that seems like how? It was not all at once. It was slow. There was a designing. There was a deciding. There was, where's that world pain and my greatest desires and passions? Where do those line up? And so it's just to say, like, name that. You might be somewhere in that process or in between, But it's going to keep getting better the more you continue to have this approach of like, I'm made to follow Jesus and love and serve my family and discover through that what I'm passionate about and what I'm good at and what is good. And calling, again, like we're talking about, calling is not just something that goes, like it's God did design you for certain things, but you form it by walking with him in relationship and understanding what you are made to do. And it's just to be so fair and honest with you, it is a long, much longer than I would prefer process. And yes, as much as you can expect that, you won't be so frustrated if you're not at the end of that or whatever. You're not at the figuring it out fully stage. It's okay to be in process, but begin the process. Begin to have these conversations and learn.
I think it was on the last episode you put it, you can't be somewhere other than you are.
You can't be where you are not.
You can't be where you're not.
Yeah.
I think this is really important for people to hear because, yeah, you might be listening into this, and particularly if you hear my story, well, Justin's found his calling. He's a lawyer and an author, but I have these things I want to do and it's not working out for me.
Hmm.
If you zoom in a little bit, I knew from the age of probably 20 that I wanted to write.
Hmm.
Always wanted to write. I was an English major. Even when I was a missionary in China, I was writing poetry, short fiction articles on the side. Hmm. And guess what? By and large, no one cared. Absolutely.
I would have read it.
Absolutely no one wanted to pay me for it. Okay. it wasn't, but I would, Brooke, every Monday night, I would, Lauren and I had an agreement. Monday night, I was allowed to just leave the house.
Okay.
And I would bike to either a tea shop or a pub in China.
Okay.
Again, we didn't have a lot of money. So I would buy a beer or maybe a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And I would sit there for like 4 hours and I would just write. And I remember the enormous tension of being like, I'm away from my wife. I'm not preparing for like our ministry work tomorrow.
Mm.
This feels indulgent. I'm just doing what I want to do. It has no discernible purpose.
Mm.
It's not, you know, making anybody money or advancing my career. Yeah. I was even thinking about applying to law school at the time. There were just, and by the way, this continued for a decade.
Before you ever actually.
For a decade of my, actually even more, from 20 to 33. Every time I sat down to write, I did so with a sense of guilt that I was like, I'm not really contributing to anybody's bottom line here. I'm just doing the thing I want to do. Now, I will also say, honestly, that was combated by a more redemptive feeling that was, I love this.
Yes.
I'm not who I am unless I write. I think God made me to do this. And
that's beautiful.
One of my favorite quotes is Cecil Day Lewis, I think, said, I write not to be understood, but to understand.
Yes.
So here's what I want to say.
Yes.
Here's what I'm trying to say. If you are quote unquote meant to do something, if you're quote unquote, you know, called to do something, if the Lord made you to do something, then it's probably the kind of thing that you will do regardless of whether it's working out to produce you an income. I just think that's a sign. If you can't not write songs, if you can't not paint paintings, if you can't not like iterate on your kids' homeschool curriculum, like I feel like I'm made to write curriculum, you know, whatever it is that you're like, this is my passion, let it be then. It may live its whole life there, and that's fine. If God made you to do it, he didn't necessarily make you to make money by it. He just made you say, I love this. Ooh. And that's a good thing. That means that like you're not who you are unless you do it.
Oof.
And when I at the age of 34, for the first time in my life, had a publisher say, I will pay you to write a book on this, I was stunned. Yeah. I was like, this is amazing.
Like it works.
I would definitely call it like a break in my life. Like it was my quote unquote big break. But people might look at that and they say, well, but how did you find the book contract? How did you find the agent? And I'm like, that's the wrong question to ask. And the better question to ask is, why did you write for 13 years without it?
You became the type of person that was a writer.
I became a writer, even though I was embarrassed to call myself that.
So, but I'm pointing out, it was a formed thing through prayer,
yes,
through practice, through discerning, through a need in the world and your passions. That story, I think, again, just encompasses what we're talking about. It wasn't just boom, lightning, Justin, author.
That's right.
It was it started with curiosity. It started with sacrifice. It started with, I don't know, is this ever going to be anything? Is this indulgent? And it makes me think of how many things that we do that are actually, there's a lot of things that you are supposed to do or that maybe God placed in you to do that isn't actually for many or anyone else. I think it's okay to love stuff that brings you closer to Jesus and just helps you appreciate him more.
Yes.
And not all of it is supposed to be efficient, financially lucrative,
yeah,
time sensitive. It is actually for you to remember, like, you are a human on this planet. And if you enjoy it, there's, God gets so much enjoyment out of watching his kids enjoy. Think about when you give your kids something that they enjoy for no reason other than they just like it.
Yes.
That same pleasure that you get, even if you don't like the thing or care about the thing, but watching somebody else enjoy something that they just, with no judgment, they just love, it's beautiful.
It is.
And it's cool when they can line up, and sometimes they do, but there's nothing wrong if it doesn't. If you paint for the rest of your life and no one sees those paintings, but they bring you closer to God, do it every single day.
Oh, yeah. I want to just zoom in on that a little bit, because we talked about last time the dividing line in good and, you know, bad work is not whether it makes money or whether you raise money. It's not like for profit or nonprofit.
Yep.
I think that this really applies here. The dividing line in whether work is worth doing for you or whether you're called to it is not whether it produces income. That's a question of whether it's your main vocation or not, particularly as a father. It's a question of whether you should be like, hey, I love that you're good at bookbinding. Like, your handmade journals are amazing. It's not going to support your family.
Exactly. Okay?
And, or I love the idea that you're a poet. I love writing poetry. That is probably not going to support your family. So what you're not, what you're not saying in that place is like, this isn't a calling you should form. You're not necessarily saying that. You're just saying this was probably not the only thing that you're going to do. And so you need to start to practice a life that is content with providing for your family through this job, but you bring in a lot of meaning through this hobby or something. And we'll, we intend to do a whole episode on side projects, hobbies, and passions. Well, but for this, I'm just trying to emphasize to people, it's a delight when that thing that you love produces significant income. That is not what has to be. And I think for fathers, you need to get real comfortable with this idea. If it's not producing a sustainable income for your family, then you need to iterate on other callings. Find to keep that thing as a hobby, but like
you have a responsibility.
You have a responsibility. Yes. And our opening salvo in this episode was that your call is to become more like God. God is a provider.
Yes.
God has made you as a father to be a provider. He has made you to take care of your family. There isn't a calling he's calling you to that doesn't involve that, right? No. Now, I'm not saying you might not go through hard times or difficulties, you know. Hudson Taylor raising support was a big like idol of mine in China. He put his...
He just prayed it through.
You know, and a lot of our ministry leaders are like great heroes. I don't know if you would want to replicate their family life. Like, some of them put their families through too much.
I completely agree. So, I'm so glad you're saying that.
Yeah. Yes. I know there's people in my life where I want to encourage them. Like, hey, you're spending too much time in what is your passion. And not enough time in what should be your role as your provider.
Yes.
Get that order right.
Yep.
Put one at the center of gravity and then let the other orbit it.
So this is something that we can talk about a little here, but we are going to absolutely, and we're teasing out all these things. Not
I'm
kind
of getting into our episode on money.
So. No, you're actually not. I was actually going to connect it to identity. Okay. Identity and work, because this is something we have to talk about, because we have the other end of the spectrum. I'm just saying the other end of the spectrum is, you love what you do so much that you find your identity in it and it becomes another idol, even if it's good. Trust me, I'm in the ministry world. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
And the worst part is we can over-spiritualize something and we can literally use spiritual excuses for overwork. We can use spiritual excuses for abandonment of our family. We can use all of these spirit. It's dangerous is all I'm saying. But we have to talk about that too when you're identity and your work overlap to a point where you are, it's too much. And so that's the other end of this, which we're talking about one end. We'll get to that end too, because that is something that you have to be so cautious of, because men, and it's just to say this, this is a fatherhood podcast. Ladies, listen in, please. And I know you do, and I'm so glad you do. And I mean every ounce of that. But to the men listening, you were literally made to work. Now, part of that is that a lot of your time, and why we want to talk about this, is because this isn't the case with every single marriage or situation, but majority of the time, men are giving the majority of their day times to a vocation or work. It is a huge percentage wise, a huge part of your life. So getting this right is just as important as getting your faith in Jesus right, getting your marriage right, getting your fatherhood right. It is up there. That's why we started with this, because if you think about walking with Jesus, your wife and your kids, what is the thing that you do more outside of that, or that is always kind of living in that, you know, again, we don't want to pit one against the other, but is having to always be balanced and thought through. It is work. The tension points with me right now, it's like, okay, so here's all of the needs of relationship, family. How can I still give the work, the responsibility, the calling that I have? How do I give that what it needs and not yet steal from the family, but both? And there's not a right or wrong, but I mean, it is that constant thing. So those on a weekly basis, 90% of my focus goes on to how can I care for my wife and my kids and Jesus, and how can I fulfill the work and calling that I have?
Yes.
And so I got to get this right.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't have it right all the time. So you're getting excited. I see you getting amped.
I know. I'm ready. I'm reading the Bible. I'm getting amped because I just want to give, I don't feel like we can start to land the plane of this episode without giving some real biblical backing.
I was just going to say, I love this. Go.
And so when you think about finding your calling, I think the reason we phrase it like that is often because we have smuggled in some either secular or pagan ideas. And I actually mean this literally in this context, like anti-biblical, unbiblical narratives that we need to undo. Mm-hmm. And so let me just read you two verses and then talk about how the doctrines of providence and free will actually are completely freeing to Christians to iterate and practice callings, and that the opposites of those are shackling.
Yes.
And they're the secular and the pagan narratives. So just real quick, Ephesians 2:8-9, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast, adding 10 here. For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. One more that's very, very helpful on this, Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Okay. Just really quick, two really dangerous narratives out there. I'm reading The Odyssey right now.
Yes.
Actually listening to it.
Okay.
In preparation for the movie that's coming out this summer. Because it's going to be made with Matt Damon's.
Okay.
I think it's Christopher Nolan.
I actually didn't know that.
Oh, it looks incredible.
Okay. I haven't seen anything about this yet.
Anyway, so I'm reading The Odyssey, getting ready for it. And at the center of The Odyssey and a lot of pagan or like thought in antiquity was the idea that you are at the whim of the gods. Odysseus is pulled back and forth from island to island, trial to trial, because the gods just frankly aren't sure whether they want him to get home or not. And many of us live with this pagan idea of fate. It's written in the stars. There's something above me. It's an impersonal force. It may or may not love me, but it's dictating everything. And I don't know if it's going to work out for me. Mm-hmm. This is actually one and the same with the materialist narrative and truly secular thought, which is, you know, we're atoms. They will do what they will do. Our consciousness is a product of only biological forces. There's no, and I mean this so seriously, there's just no meaningful room for free will or freedom of choice or autonomy in a world that says the Big Bang started everything, evolution carried it forth, and here we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is ridiculously mechanical. Mm-hmm. And we take these two things, and very few people call themselves pagan. Mm-hmm. Very few people call themselves a true secular materialist. Mm-hmm. But these narratives exist in the ether, and they make us think, I'm not really steering the ship. I'm lucky if I find it. I just got to keep my eyes out. And then there's this other narrative that's completely different, but it's equally modern. And it's the idea of, you know, you are your choices. Like, go get yours. Like, Moana, just do, you know, go see if you can make something of yourself. And
manifest it.
It's Disney narratives. And they're not all, you know, they're more nuanced than this. But
of course,
there are two ideas. Mm-hmm. One is complete fate. One is complete choice. What is so incredible about the Christian inheritance of our worldview, because it is reality, is that we paradoxically see God's providence and our free will as working together and meant to be. If you want to go deep, I've read Boethius on this last summer. Incredible book on how God's foreknowledge of all time still fits with your freedom of choice. I grew up in a lot of reform circles. I've thought a lot about Calvinism. Even in Calvinistic thought, there's this idea of, you know, God working truly through free choices. You are not unburdened of responsibility. And I mentioned those two things because just whether you're going to classical Christianity or whether you're going to Calvinism, this is not an inter-Christian debate. I'm saying broadly, Christian thought sees two things as true, that you have choices to make, brother.
Yes.
Like, Father, you need to get off your you-know-what and make some choices and take some risks and say, God's providence is real. Mm. How does it unfold? Even Calvin would say, through your choices. Go do something. This is why in my word map, literally I've just written, do something, point. But do it in the knowledge that God has prepared good works for you. Good works in Christ Jesus that you've been created for. He's working all things together for good. He will work through your mistakes. He'll work through your bad choices. Amazingly, unfortunately, he will also work through your inaction and your paralysis and your frozenness. And you can take great confidence that God is writing a good story of the world, but you must take great responsibility that you are the one to act it out. So you got to go do some stuff with the calm that comes on a Christian knowing God is watching over all that he does.
Dude, I'm literally just sitting in processing what you said and thankful for, again, that just tension and perspective, because I think it is so, what I also think we have to do and we're doing, you know, without overstating it, but we're just having to also undo, we've had to do this individually, I think, and even again, we're doing it together, where you have to unlearn before you can relearn. There's been a lot of these like unintentional, I don't think it's been intentional, but, and some maybe, but unintentional patterns and, what is the right way? Cultural things that we, even in Christianity, that we have like absorbed and that we've pulled onto or held onto, or the church has grabbed and unintentionally taught. And it's like I love when you actually read and study the scriptures and you come across these things that are like, that isn't actually what it's meant at all. But why is that the way that I have embodied that, felt it, been explained, it was explained to me that way or whatever. And so just freeing, I think this is really freeing what you're saying. And I think there's so many that we could, you know, continue in when it comes to this idea. But I want to just to land the plane for today. I think it's really important that we name, you just gave a scripture, something that's really fascinating. Read Exodus 2 and 3 when you get a chance. It's how Moses' story actually shapes his calling. So many of your stories are going to shape your calling. And we don't have time to read, obviously, through two chapters, but to just say, like, note that. And why I say that is because it's really important for you to remember. And we talked about this in season one. So go back and listen, like, how your story, I think it was even episode 2 or 3. I can't remember. I'm not as accurate as Justin on that memory there, but your story and understanding it and knowing what family you're from, and it's absolutely going to shape where you're at and who you are and what's going on. And it doesn't even have to be bad, but the more that you understand what it is, the more clear it will be what you are supposed to step into. And so if you're like listening to this, you're like, it seems like it's yes and or yes to both questions. It's because it's a tension point.
Yeah.
It isn't just one thing. And to sum it, our first calling is to become more like Jesus. You can know that if you are following the way of Jesus, you are fulfilling your calling. And when it comes to work and when it comes to these different ways of making money and what you feel satisfied with, that's a process. It takes time and you form it.
Yeah.
You form your calling in that sense more than you then it's just zapped to you.
And that one's negotiable. The former is not.
Yes.
You know, if you're, yes. if you think, hey, my calling is to do this thing and it contradicts the word, it's not your calling. Absolutely. Like that one's simple.
And so, well, this last week, what we had said as just a practice is write down three things that give you life and three yes. things you see in the world. I would say, actually, you need to do that again. So if you haven't done it, do that. And why I'm saying that, and the practice that Justin gave as well, of writing your story is of writing just basically the story of your work in those mm-hmm. four things again. Why we need to do that again is simply to just really be clear about what it is that you are to do. And then the one last little, maybe I would say maybe as an added practice. And Justin, if you have anything on this,
I got one practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I thought you did, but just the one practice to add to that after you kind of named those three things, in your life and in the world, just even identifying a repeated pattern in your life and ask, where did this start? Let me give you a, for instance, some people have families, like one of my dear friends have some families where maybe they moved a lot, and vocationally what they saw was a family that like moved all the time, every like year, because they couldn't find their vocation. Mm-hmm. And so therefore all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm like moving every year
yeah.
or every 2 years. That's an example to say, like, where is your story, your family? Like, where does that pattern like show up? What is the pattern? Write it out and just begin to, again, identify where is this showing up in your life and story.
Yeah. So my practice for you all would be to take the exercise that Brooke started on last week. You write out three things that you feel passionate about, right?
Three things that give you life and three needs in the world.
Yeah, three things give you life and three things that are needed in the world. If you put those in a circle,
yes,
you could put the first one is the things you enjoy, things mm-hmm. that you're passionate about. Let's call it the top circle. Then put in the next circle, the problems that need to be solved in the world. Let's mm-hmm. call that the need circle. So you have the I enjoy circle, the need circle. Then draw one more circle, and we're going to call this one the talent circle. Mm. Like, what are you good at? Mm-hmm. What do people affirm? Like,
yeah,
where these circles overlap is typically a great place to try to iterate and find your vocation. Mm. Because what you enjoy overlaps with what you're actually good at, overlaps with what the world needs, you can spend most of your life there. Mm. This is what we call a vocation that someone will pay you for.
Yes.
Because you like it, you can keep doing it. Yes. Turns out you're good enough to get paid for it. Now, people will pay you for things that the world doesn't necessarily need. That's a nuance. So being able to be paid for it is not the only sign that the world needs yes. it, but it's a pretty good sign. If no one's willing to pay you for this, it might be a sign that the world doesn't need it. Maybe.
Yeah,
ask your friends.
That's gonna be tricky, yeah.
But I just think that's a really helpful way to get guys unstuck. Some guys are living their whole life and like, I'm passionate about this and I think the world needs it. But like, turns out, man, you're not good at it. Like, you can do it as a hobby, but it's not your way you're going to provide for your family.
Yeah.
Or they're sitting there being like, man, I'm so good at this. And I pity these people. Not really. They're so good at it. They're so good at making money, but they're like, I don't love this.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, I wish I had your problem. Yeah. but those, you know, those people need to find a way to bring meaning into their life. They need to find like, maybe they're either leaving their vocation to do something meaningful, mm-hmm. or maybe they're just bringing in a hobby. I just think plotting out this Venn diagram, what do you enjoy? What does the world need and what will they pay you for? What are you talented at? Is a great way to start to figure out how to balance your life. Because if you're lucky, let's not use the word luck actually. If you're blessed, you'll live right in the center.
Yeah.
And what you love will make you money and you're yes. good at it. But most people will have a scattershot diagram where they do a couple different things and they find their balance that way.
Well, can I just say that pray that you'd be blessed?
Why not?
At the end, no, not why not, but like, I don't know about you, Justin, but just real talk before we're done today. The only reason I am doing the thing that, like, the reason I'm in the middle of that Venn diagram, and I really do feel like I am, personally for me.
You do feel it? I fortunately feel like I found the middle too.
I do, and I feel blessed. For a lot of years, I didn't.
Yeah.
And what drew me to want that was the desperation that I wasn't in that space. And I did one of the only things I could do, which was pray a lot, asking God for that, asking God for clarity. I prayed a prayer a long time ago that God, by the time I'm 32, and I don't know why it was that age, would I be stepping into the, no, I think it was 33. Would I be starting or in the thing that I'm really made to do? And I prayed that for years. And one of the reasons I did was because I was like, I just know that what I'm doing right now isn't that. Now, I didn't have like all this clarity. I just knew that what I was doing, there was mass. And if you're listening to this, you know what I'm talking about. Like it was a hole there. I was like, this isn't the thing. I just knew it. And so what happened? Well, prayer. And let me just tell you, just so you know, so you start praying and then God asks you to obey. So I just, as we close, as we said, the practices, if you start praying this way, that God would bless you, that you would be in the middle of that Venn diagram, that you would be like having all those things converge, there is no doubt going to be a moment in that journey where God asks you to obey, i.e. trust him with stuff and in ways that feel uncomfortable, where it's going to literally be like, well, if you want this, now some of it might be an easy lift, but you might be literally in a different direction than God's going. Therefore, if you're really asking for that, he might actually invite you into some steps of obedience that feel super uncomfortable, but are a part of the process.
Right.
Simply just let me sum it up to say, like, when, I can't, this is so funny, when Phil and Diane came to Elizabeth and I and said, you should come join Intentional. In every way in my entire being, I did not want to do it. And it was because I was about to go plant a church in Seattle or New York, either of those places. We were on track to do that. I wanted to plant the church. I wanted to be the guy. I didn't want to be in the family ministry space. I hated that as an idea. I was like, no way. Nothing in me wanted to do it even at all. And what they were inviting me into was a part-time job with them, my in-laws, who I had already worked with before, which is not easy. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And then my buddy that lives in a smaller town in a smaller church goes, hey, why don't you come and help me halftime? So I'm like literally working at a church halftime and a nonprofit that I have no idea if it's going anywhere with my in-laws. And I'm all of a sudden feeling like I'm supposed to say yes to this very unglamorous thing where I move away from any sort of city context or whatever, where I would feel like I would know or be known. And all of a sudden I'm in this obscure place working at a small church and a small nonprofit, not having any clue of why I said yes, but feeling in every part of my life I was supposed to say yes. And that I'm saying that to say it was like a 6 to 7 year process.
Yeah.
And now I'm like 7 years into that, probably a 5 year process in full to go like, okay, I think I can see this and I think I'm made to do this and I think I'm supposed to do this and I think God might be behind it. But that's in recent years, friends. And so I'm just saying,
it's so good.
That's what it can look like.
Yeah.
And it's not anything that I would have expected.
Can I note two things on that before we close? This is just striking me. In the Venn diagram that I was trying to sketch out earlier, you know, you have what you're talented at, what the world needs, and what you enjoy. Along our theme of iterating and forming your calling more than finding it, you know, keep in mind, talent can be practiced.
Yeah.
Like you can get better at something.
I was gonna say skill is probably a better word than even talent.
Really?
Right?
Yeah. Because talent is more, it's not so much discovered as it is developed.
It is. Almost everything's a skill.
And then need, what does the world need? There's part of this is sales. Like, are you able to go sell yourself this? You can get better at saying, hey, actually I'm good at this. Somebody pay me for it. But the harder, I think people realize that, like, you can develop talents. You can, you know, convince the world that they need a new X, you know, advertisers, they're great at it, marketing. But sometimes we think we're stuck with the, what do we enjoy? And this is why your story just sparked this in my mind. Mm. The enjoyment circle is actually more about formation than like the whims of your desires. Like, again, we're created, we're born into a culture that assumes like you're born a certain way and you like a certain set of things and you're just this way. And it's just not true. Like, we're very formable, moldable people. Mm. We get formed by certain things and we can be formed in certain ways. It's not an absolute truth, but it's a pretty elastic one.
Yeah.
And I loved what you said. You were like, this very unglamorous thing. Like, I don't think I want to do that. And as it turns out in your story, two things are happening. One, God was shaping what you actually wanted to do.
Like, yes.
Your what you enjoyed was more elastic than you thought, I think.
Big time.
And then this is huge, but it's more of a seed for next episode, not this one. I think you got over yourself of like, you got over like, oh, this is not you had an idol in your head.
Yes, of absolutely.
The sexy thing you wanted to do.
Yes.
The thing that was going to make you, the yep. person that you're. And look, again, this is just this is a teaser for next episode. So many of you fathers have an idea of yourself that you are desperate to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an idol.
Dude,
it's a pretty selfish, like I've always just thought I would do X and
you're stuck.
And your whole life is like shackled to this image.
Mm.
We literally call that idolatry. Now, maybe the Lord wants to bring you to it, but he's going to refine you before you get there. He's going to tear you down before he builds you up. Or maybe it's just truly an idol. But lots of times, and I just heard this in your story, you don't really get to forming your calling until you do the ballsy thing of repenting and being like, all right, fine, Lord. I don't want to go to Nineveh, but all right, fine.
It was exactly that, and killing the pride. And do not underestimate how much our egos play into every decision we make, even when they are quote unquote godly things.
Yeah.
And I think that you couldn't be more right, because there was no way that I don't think I would ever be able to obey God with what he might ask me to do now if I didn't obey that first step. And that first one was a hard one. It was like, are you going to lay down what you think could happen? Are you willing to like let it die? The prayer of relinquishment. And the prayer of relinquishment is a wonderful prayer. I've said it before in other episodes, but as a note, Richard Foster Rock, it's an ancient form of prayer, but it's that idea that you literally visually in your head dig a grave and you throw all of your dreams and your hopes in
it. I love it.
And then you know, in your head, you're burying it. You're literally putting all the dirt over your hopes and dreams. And then this is the prayer. Gentlemen, pray this prayer. Lord, resurrect is that what is from you, and whatever needs to stay dead, let it stay dead. And that was, and here's what's funny.
That's incredible. Oh, that's
here's what's funny. A year before that invitation came, constantly out of just complete frustration that I knew I wasn't where I was supposed to be, every night I'd be on prayer walks around our block praying the prayer of relinquishment. And I finally got to a place where I was like, fine, I'm burying my, being a lead pastor, doing this thing, doing all the stuff that I was supposed to do. I just started throwing it in the grave. And I mean, at least a couple of times, I know I really meant it, where it was like, resurrect whatever is from you, but whatever needs to stay dead, keep it dead. And the thing I'll say about this, and anyone that's done this knows, certain things came back that I would have totally expected. Like, yep, I knew that was there. Like I knew that was, you know, and there's other things that stayed in the ground that I would have expected come back to life, but they're still there.
But they're still dead.
And they're not coming back in my estimation.
That's a great practice to add to our listeners. I've never done that. I'm going to pray that.
Dude.
And I also just think this is, intentionally or not, this is a fantastic setup for the next episode.
Yep.
Because if we've convinced you in episode one that you're made to work, like God has a big, big picture, big theological view of vocation that he wants you to have. And then two, if you know, okay, now you got to form your calling in this. I think the question arises, how do you be ambitious enough to do it while being humble enough to do it without pride and idolatry? So
there it is.
How do you have ambition without idols? Two huge things that kill men, kill fathers.
Oof.
How do we have ambition without having idols? That is for next episode. See you next week.